flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton sheets from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with sheets that feel breathable to sleep in. You'll experience the purest softness on night one and feel your sheets get even softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first set of sheets at bollandbranch.com with code Odyssey. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Good to be with you. Senior Bowl going on this week in Mobile, Alabama. A lot of Texans representation down there. Last few days, including our next guest joining us on the hotline right now, is our good friend, Texan sideline reporter. And this time of year, he's the best damn draft guru in the business for my money, because my money goes to footballtakeover.com, which is his website. And his name is John Harris. Johnny, how we doing? Long trip back from Mobile. Appreciate you getting up with us, man.
Yeah, man. Appreciate it, Shawnee. Yeah, it was a great trip coming back until I hit Clint Sterner's Baytown. And then it was thick fog for the next hour and a half. So I think I arrived home last night. I think. It's hard to tell what house I walked into. But, yeah, it was a good trip to Mobile. A couple of good days of practice. Really focused for me. On the offensive side of the ball, which I guess being involved with the Texans, anybody involved with the Texans would want to know, you know, what's happening on the offensive side of the ball. So I did get some cursory glances at some interior and edge defensive linemen. But for the most part, I just spent a lot of time watching wide receivers, tight ends, offensive linemen. It's going to be a really interesting draft from an offensive lineman standpoint for a number of reasons. And I don't know whether that's really good for the Texans or not, but a good week down in Mobile. I got one more practice today, but good to be home and good to talk to you guys.
What were there any offensive linemen that really stuck out to you that you think, okay, well, whichever scheme the Texans end up running this year, this guy could come in and this guy could compete immediately?
You know, it's interesting, Seth. I thought I actually had conversations with people from University of Alabama. Somebody that I knows somebody within the athletic department and close to the football program. And so I was picking his brain about Tyler Booker, who's not there in Mobile. But to me, Tyler Booker is like the quintessential, like, gap scheme guard. But I think he could adjust and do well in a zone scheme if that's what they end up doing. But I think he's got, multiple abilities to play in multiple schemes. And everything I heard back was essentially, I'll put it in my words, he's very swarmy. And I thought, ooh, Okay, that's music to my ears. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I like hearing that. Like, he's the alpha on the offensive line. He's an ass kicker up front. He is thick and strong, does everything that you'd want offensive lineman to do. He's one of the first to meetings. He's one of the last to leave. He's one of those guys. So I didn't get to see him up close, but when people ask me about, you know, 25, number 25, where the Texans are picking, oh, they got to take a guard, right? They got to take a guard. I'm like, no, it's not a guard. It's got to be Tyler Booker if it's going to be a guard, because I think he is such head and shoulders above everybody else. And I think because of what I learned about him, you know, from the people from Alabama and what people have seen on tape, I don't know that he gets to 25, but I think he's the exact kind of guy that D'Amico and Nick would be looking for on an offensive line. The Senior Bowl group I thought was interesting because the guards were a lot of tackles converted to guard, which I think it's kind of like, do I like that? Do I not? You know, is that Matt Sharping sort of stuff? I don't know. But I do know that the biggest standout there was a guy who did that, and that was Gray Zabel from out of North Dakota State. Dude was a rock. He was unbelievable. Now, two things. One, he's converting from tackle to guard. And I don't know how people feel about that. Secondly, the Texans have not made a habit since Nick Caseri's taken over of drafting FCS players. But it was clear watching Gray Zabel that not only was he phenomenal at guard in every aspect, run game, pass game, but he's got some swarmy attitude too. The defensive tackle from Virginia Tech, Aeneas Peebles, was talking all kinds of trash. I mean, he's just chirping the whole time. And Zabel, I see Zabel at one point down, like, get in stance, son. And Zabel worked his ass. I'm like, yeah, that's the kind of guy I love. A guy that says, you stand right there because I'm about to beat your ass. And he did. So Gray Zabel's a name that got, I think, probably the most rave reviews. And I think he would fit. And also I think he could fit because I think he played tackle too. So depending on how you put this whole offensive line together going forward, I could see Gray Zabel being part of it. Now, Tyler Booker can only play guard. And it's okay, but he can only play guard. So he's got to be really damn good. But what I learned, I liked. And when I talked to people there, that was one of the questions I wanted to know, if they knew players, like, do they have the swarm mentality? Mm-hmm. And in all positions. And, you know, learning about some of these players, one receiver that I really liked in particular, yeah, that's going to be, I think, something that we look at for all these draft picks. How good are they? Yeah. How fast are they? Yeah. But do they swarm? And I'm not just talking about running the football. You guys know what I mean.
Yeah.
They've got to have that mentality. And I think there are a number of guys that fit position-wise that fit mentality-wise too.
Okay, so a couple names. Tyler Booker from Alabama, Gray Zabel from North Dakota State on the offensive line. Johnny, I think a lot of people are wondering, what does this wide receiver class look like? The last two classes have been very deep at the top. You know, you had the four wide receivers a couple years ago go right in a row in the first round, and they've all played pretty well. And then you had a bunch of wide receivers, I mean, really scattered throughout the first and second round last year. How's it looking for this year? Because it would seem as though the Texans are in the market at that position.
Yeah, to me, this one is, I think, probably a little bit closer to that Jackson Smith and Jigba year, mm-hmm, where Smith and Jigba, Addison, Quentin Johnston, those three, I think, I'm trying to remember who the other guy was.
Zay Flowers, the best out of all
of them. Oh, yeah, Zay Flowers. And they all go right in a row. And all four of them, I mean, even Johnston wasn't great this year. He's okay. But, you know, the other three have been really good. I mean, they haven't been number one good, but, you know, JSN's pretty close. I think this group is probably closer to that. I think you've got, depending on what position you want to play, Travis Hunter. I mean, he's kind of the one up on the shelf. Like, okay, he's, to me, like, what is that guy? Is he receiver? Is he DB? I say yes. I think you play both. I mean, it's funny because I texted you, Sean. I was like, trade up for Travis Hunter. You solve your third corner and your second, third wide receiver problem all in the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, so that would be fun. But after that, it's kind of interesting. I love T-Mac, Tetherell McMillan from out of Arizona. I love that guy. In fact, he's my number one wide receiver in this group. I love him. But then after that, you got Luther Burden from Missouri. You got Emeka Buka from Ohio State. You got those two in particular, Matthew Golden from Texas. You got guys that I think at 25 would be great fits, tremendous fits, and really along the lines of the Addison, JSN, Quentin Johnston group. I don't think they're Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, or Marvin Harrison. They're not that kind of like that trio, but they're really rock solid, rock steady. And when I watch a couple of those guys, I get a young Robert Woods vibe. And I'm thinking, man, if I had a young Robert Woods and I put him with Nico Collins, how would I feel about that? I'm like, I'd feel pretty good. And that's kind of the vibe I get from those guys. Now, at the Senior Bowl, I thought the group was good, but it was probably more, you know, day two, late, like mid-day two guys going on into day three. But those are guys that you know, we've seen Xavier Hutchinson. He's at the Senior Bowl. I thought he had a decent Senior Bowl. It wasn't great, but he goes in the sixth. Look what he's contributed to the Texans in his 2 years. This group at the Senior Bowl, I thought it was fun to watch. Jack Betch from out of TCU is one of my favorites. I mean, he was awesome to watch because you could see the swarming mentality. And how often we joke about Kevin Walter blocking. Like, Jack Betch is that guy. He will block his ass off to the end of the whistle. Like, he did it to R.J. Oben, your guy from Notre Dame, on a toss crack play. And Oben got so pissed, he, like, swung and hit him with an elbow at the end of the play. So, but Betch was also the guy making plays down the field, too. He had a couple of the best catches in the Senior Bowl, and he's good size. He's 6'1", 205. He started his career at LSU. Thought he had a better opportunity at TCU. Had a really good year in 24. I think he definitely should be on the radar screens. And I know one that Seth tweeted about yesterday was Tez Johnson out of Oregon. He's an interesting one because he is Tank Dell 2.0. And so the hope is that you can get Tank back healthy in 20, hopefully 25, but maybe 26. But then could you live with Tank Dell and Tez Johnson together combined? I don't think they weigh more than Foley Fatakasi. But when Tez Johnson runs routes, at the end of the route, he's open every time by 5 yards, and he just stares back at guys like, hey, y'all gonna cover me today or what? Mm-hmm. Like, he is absolutely dynamic in the same way that Tank is. And he was phenomenal the first 2 days. I just don't know how I feel about that. And Seth, I think, encapsulated it very, very well. Like, can you live with both of them? But, you know, that's maybe putting the cart in front of the horse. You got to get ready for 25. And if Tez Johnson is a guy you've rated that high and you think he can add something to this offense at 25, then let's rock on.
You know, I had that's, I'm trying to figure out if I'm trying to be too clever or overthink it or not. If you really like a guy, don't worry about it. But yeah, you've got, it feels like you've really only got room on any NFL roster for one guy like that. So the other guy who's the other guy that you probably saw, I tweeted about, just because I saw him in Bucky Brooks' mock draft, and he's not at the Senior Bowl, is Kenneth Grant, the defensive tackle out of Michigan. I remember watching him last year and thinking, like, okay, he's all right. And then I watched him from 2025, and oh my gosh. I mean, the guy's 340 pounds, but he moves. He's like a Vince Wilfork in the way he moves at that size. Is that a guy, like, forget about whether you should or should not draft the defensive tackle at number 25 overall. Is that a guy that you could see D'Amico Ryans liking, or is he maybe a little too much of a classic run stuffer size for D'Amico?
No, I think for that reason you just said, Seth, I think he is very light on his feet. I don't know. I don't know if it's 340. I mean, I know that's what it says. I don't know if he's 340, but he moves like he's 315, 320, and I'm okay with those kind of guys.
Yeah.
And I think that D'Amico would too. As long as a guy – and you look at Kenneth Grant, like, he's different from T'Vondre Sweat. Like, T'Vondre just looked like big. Kenneth Grant is like, damn, he's ripped. Like, there's a different kind of big. You know that. You played next to guys that were like that. Because some guys that are 330, 340, you look at it and go, okay, that's weight well put together. I think Kenneth Grant is exactly that way. When I saw Bucky's – mock draft, I've seen a couple of them that have put Kenneth Grant to the Texans, and I just nod like, yep, okay, I'm good with that, because he is an absolute interior run stuffer. And when you look at what you have to stop in this division to win this division right now, well, you still got to stop Jonathan Taylor. And the irony of a kid from Indiana coming here to Houston to end up stuffing the Colts, you know, time and time again against the run. I still, you know, I've been around long enough to have remembered, like you said, Seth, Wilfork and Reeder. Like, you just didn't move them. Like, those dudes were like Stonehenge. Like, you had to run around them if you had any chance. And more than likely, they were strong enough to throw you off and then go grab the running back at that point. I think Kenneth Grant's got that kind of ability. Now, the guy next to him is a super stud. You're not going to have any chance of getting Mason Graham. But Kenneth Grant, I think at 25, I'd be all about it. And again, I know when people hear oh, that's a defensive tackle, or he's an offensive guard. I'm not thinking that way. I'm thinking about specific people. If it's Kenneth Grant, yes, absolutely. Other defensive tackles, I don't know that I would do it. Tyreek Williams, maybe from Ohio State, good player. I might think about him at 25. But it's got to be specific guys that I'm looking at, not the position. People ask me that all the time. Well, what position do you think they're going at? No. I want specific bodies. Like last year, when I had a fan come up to me and say, "Well, we should get a tight end." I'm like, no. I don't want these tight ends. I want him, and him was Cade Stover. So that's what I want to see. It's specific guys that I think are going to fit this mentality. I think Kenneth Grant would absolutely do it. And I do think you could have a little bit of flexibility, not a ton, but a little bit of flexibility with him up front. And I think he would eventually grow into a pretty decent interior pass rusher in due time. So I do think that he could fit this defense that DeMeco has.
Yeah, I like that you say he's put together well, too, because, you know, I see 340, and what I worry about is the Tex-Mex factor. The lure of the avocado is strong, and I know firsthand that can be worth 25 extra pounds in an off season. So it sounds like he doesn't have weight issues. He's probably playing at the right weight.
Yeah, I want to say, and I don't want to step out of turn, but I want to say that he played running back in high school at times. But I could be wrong, because I want to say I remember seeing him wear number 5 when he was in high school. And I always love seeing that. I could be wrong on that, so I don't want to get too much into that. But I just know that when I see a guy like that, he's light on his feet. He reminds me a little bit of Reader in that way. And I remember it being at the Senior Bowl a number of years ago. DJ had a really kind of tough senior season. His dad had died. He didn't know whether he wanted to play again. And then at the end of the year, he came back and played, and he was magnificent, but he didn't play enough. So we wanted to see him at the Senior Bowl, and he dominated the Senior Bowl. And I was like, I like that dude. And then you come to find out what DJ is all about, and you're like, oh, no, I love that dude. So maybe that's the guy Kenneth Grant can be. You know, you just have to do it a lot earlier because of the career he had in Michigan.
My favorite thing about DJ is he was an amazing baseball player. Does not fit the prototype for a baseball player. John Harris, Texan sideline reporter and draft expert, joining us right now on Sports Radio 610. So, Johnny, inside the division, the number one overall pick sits with the Tennessee Titans right now. Should they take a quarterback? And if so, which quarterback would you take if you were the GM of the Titans?
I'll tell you who I wouldn't take, but I'll tell you who I think they're – I think what's going to happen with the Titans – it was interesting. I talked to a few people. I saw some Titans people in the elevator when I got there, and they saw my Texans gear, and I just kind of looked at them all. They were kind of like, hey.
Flex on them, Johnny.
Yeah. I just kind of chuckled a little bit, like, yeah, we've been there. I mean, there was kind of like this commiseration of like, yeah, we were there a few years ago. I understand. One of the questions I asked the Titans people is, you know, how is this thing with Chad Brinker and Mike Borgonzi going to go down? Like, who's got the final call? Because it feels very murky. And what I heard back was, I don't think they know. And I'm like, oh, that's great. And it was like, well, they're going to figure it out. And I'm like, you know what figuring it out does? It turns the building into my guys versus your guys. And that ain't good for the Titans. Now, it's good for us, but it's, you know. Apparently, at this East-West Shrine, they spent a lot of time with Shadur. And, you know, they came out of there saying all the right things about Shadur. And I hope to God they draft Shadur. But that's on them. I think the best thing they're going to find, nobody's going to want to trade. There's no market to move up to number one. None. No market. You can say all the great things about Cam Ward, Shadur Sanders you want, Travis Hunter. There is no market for number one. We will sit there. I was talking to my buddy from the Giants, John Schmelk, who does a great job with draft stuff, covers the Giants. And I was asking him what they were going to do at 3. And we kind of were talking about the number one pick. He's like, John, why would you go to 3? We'll sit there and take Abdul Carter and Travis Hunter if it falls to 3. Because, you know, one of them's going to take a quarterback and, you know, figure out what Cleveland's going to do. So we'll end up with one of our guys at 3. He said, there's no market for one. So now, could there be a trade? Maybe. But you're not going to get a haul as if you're trading up for Caleb Williams or whomever else, Bryce Young, whatever the trades have been to get up to number one lately. So there's just no market there. So I think Tennessee is going to resolve themselves to picking between Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and that's going to be dicey for a year or two. But I think Cam would be a better fit overall, but that's my opinion. Cam is going to be, for me, quarterback one. I just think he's got a little bit more of the stuff that I like. But in all honesty, QB1 this year is more the lesser of two evils because I do not care for Shedeur Sanders as a quarterback or a leader of my team. So I'm going to go with Cam Ward going to Tennessee, and I think eventually he'll be okay. He'll be all right. But there's a lot of stuff to clean up that may not happen in year one, and we'll see, kind of like with Will Levis, does it happen or not in year two? Will Levis, it didn't happen, and it wasn't going to happen. But Cam Ward's not Will. I think he's got more quarterback ability. He's got more playmaking ability. He's still got some stupid stuff in his decision-making he's got to get rid of. But I think for the next 10 to 12 years, it'll be C.J. Stroud against Cam Ward twice a year.
John Harris, Texan sideline reporter, joining us here on Sports Radio 610. Johnny, I was just going to cut you loose right now after all this awesome draft talk. We're about to reveal the poll that we put up yesterday for offensive play of the year and defensive play of the year for the Texans. And as you were on the sideline for all of these plays, so I figured, yeah, you know what? Let's get Johnny's opinion on this, because I know that you've got – your brain operates as a database, and you got every single play logged in your brain right now. We had to do four choices because it's a Twitter poll, and we played Mark's call on all of them and whatnot. But off the cuff, yeah, off the top of your head, best offensive play, and you can do this subjectively, however you categorize best – best offensive play of the year, for the Houston Texans.
I still say it's the Nico Collins bomb against Buffalo.
Okay.
I think that play is such kind of because Nico gets hurt on that play, and it obviously over the next five games has a significant impact. I think that's probably and here's the other thing too about that play, which kind of makes you wax nostalgic. They really didn't hit the deep ball after that.
Right.
You know, after that, after Nico went down, the deep ball really did not remain part of the calculus of this offense. And I hated that. So I would say strictly offensive, I would say Nico Collins bomb against Buffalo. That's probably one of my favorites. And I think it probably was the one that really turned that game in that direction for us to go win it.
The only reason it didn't make the cut for me, because I was the one who, like, you know, I was the judge and jury as to what made it through the gate on this, and then Seth and I kind of talked each of these through, and then we left it up to the people, because he got hurt on that play. You know, that was the play where he pulled his hammy.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people were saying, hey, the Tankdale touchdown might have been one of the best plays of the year, other than Tankdale got carted off the field afterwards.
That shows you the luck of this year and just the luck of any year. Is like you have two monumental touchdowns from two of your stars, and you got to sit there and talk about injuries for the next 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just it's amazing
it's
to
horrible.
Think that's how it went. Defensively, this one's easy for me because of where it happened, how it happened, who was involved. To me, it's really easy. It was Derek Barnett in Dallas. The scoop and score, Jalen Petrie getting the final strip out.
Yep.
You know, the fact that Petrie and Barnett are involved in that, that's the play to me. And I'll never forget that play because that's the corner of the end zone where most Texans fans were that night. And so I just remembered when he ran past me, I looked up in that area, and it was like – just the euphoria that I know had been missing for a number of years. I look up, and you know what that means to Houston fans to beat that team. We never beat them in Dallas, obviously. And then that's the coup de grace. I just remember taking it in for like 30 seconds, like, this is cool as hell, man. This is really neat. So that's to me the defensive play.
You know, we saw in the last couple of years guys – come and play for the Texans on a one-year contract and then go get a better contract elsewhere, the defensive line especially. So Derek Barnett is a free agent. If you had to give a percentage chance that Derek Barnett is back this year, what do you think it is?
I think the way that Derek played the second half of the year, I think there's a good chance that he'll come back. I mean, obviously the health, you know, is something that, you know, for all players, you don't know what guys were dealing with. You know, he might have 5-6 different things he's dealing with, Seth, which, you know, so you don't know that part of it, but I absolutely would. I love Derek Barnett. And I still think he's got enough in the tank, plays the run really well. Obviously, he knows how to score touchdowns. I don't know where he finished on our scoring list or who scored more touchdowns than he did. I think it was Nico, Joe, and then Barnett. So I would think about it. But I do think, as crazy as it sounds, if you have Daniil and you got Will, obviously Will's still a young guy, but he's going to year three. I think that, you know, I think Jerry's probably done. But Dylan Horton did a good job, so, you know, Dylan, bring him back 100% fresh. I would like to bring back a guy that's a little different than all those guys. And a guy that would be different than all those guys would be somebody just pure speed. Like, absolute pure speed. Like, how does that guy win? Rip, speed. Rip, bend. Like, that's it. That is kind of a situational guy. You know, maybe a guy that plays, like, stack backer, but then on third down can maybe move up, like a Josh Uche or somebody like that. That all you ask that guy to do is go rush the quarterback because he's got blinding speed. So, and I'd like him to be a young guy, but I do think that Derek comes back. I do think they need a little bit of youth at that position to go with the guys they've got. So, that's probably the way that I would look at it. Just somebody very, very unique that's got some speed, that does some different things, that of course is swarmy. I'm good with that.
Got to be swarmy on both sides of the ball, baby. That's the great John Harris, who is as swarmy a sideline reporter and draft expert as you're going to find out there. Johnny, we appreciate the time, man. Keep up the great work. FootballTakeover.com is going to be popping these next few months, right?
Absolutely. Got a lot of stuff coming. I got my observations from day one and part of day two up at Texans.com, and then I'll have the rest of my Senior Bowl stuff at FootballTakeover.com. So hop on over. I appreciate it. You guys are the best. It was a long drive back from Mobile, and I'm like, man, do I want to do this at 7? Oh, my gosh, this is early. But I'm glad I did. I love talking to you guys, and I'm going to hang up and listen. Love you.
We love you too, Johnny. We're glad you did it too. Appreciate the all the insight. Good stuff.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so that's with bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, grilled onions, ketchup, and hold the pickles.
You know what you like. You wouldn't order your burger just any way. Why should your sports talk be any different? With Chapters on the free Odyssey app, you can choose the topics that matter to you most. Whether it's reactions, matchup previews, injury updates, or team news, quickly find what you really care about. Your football talk, your way. Download the free Odyssey app and start listening today.
So, you know what? I was looking at never mind. Sorry. I was looking up. I wanted to see where Derek Barnett ranked in scoring, and for some reason, they're showing me 2,000.
I think Johnny was right. I think his two touchdowns put him. Dalton scored 2. I don't know if Tank scored 2 or 3, but yeah, like that was the first thing I thought of when he went over the goal line against the Titans was, oh, crap, he's got multiple touchdowns. I don't know how many guys on this team have multiple touchdowns this year on the Texans. So there you go. The great John Harris. You can get all his stuff. He does. Yeah, HoustonTexans.com and FootballTakeover.com is his subscription site. It's a small fee and worth every penny of it. Johnny's stuff is really, really good. All right, so I mentioned, Seth, we did the top 4 defensive plays of the year. Let's see how Johnny's opinion lines up with the people here. The people have, I put it to a vote, and the 4 offensive plays, Johnny's play with Nico on that bomb did not make it because Nico got hurt on that play. That's why I can't, in good conscience, call it one of the best plays of the year because on that play.
I can't watch it.
Yeah.
It can't be one of the best plays of the year where you can't watch it. I got so angry when they showed that in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They showed that at the beginning of the Chiefs game. Yep. Just stop it. Don't show that again.
Yeah. No, it was 6 points and 6 games missed practically for Nico Collins because of that play. So the 4 plays we had were the Nico Collins 3rd and 11 catch to help close out the Indy game, which go back and watch. I know it doesn't like 3rd and 11. That's one of the best plays. it was an amazing throw, an amazing catch, and super important in what empirically is one of the most important games of the year, the road game against Indy. Number two, Dario Gumbawale's game-winning touchdown against the Jags. Number three, Damian Pierce's 92-yard touchdown run against the Titans in Week 18. And then number four, the Stroud to Hutch miracle play, the fumble, scoop, scramble, Hutch play in the playoff game against the Chargers. Have you looked at the poll, Seth, to see what the people think?
No, I've not looked at the poll.
Okay, do you care to predict which of these four plays you think the people chose?
I think because of the venue, or not the venue, but the situation, and because of the improbability of this play being made, that it's got to be the Xavier Hutchinson one versus the Chargers.
All right, well, let's see if Seth was right.
Stroud calls for the ball. And the ball goes through Stroud. He picks it up. Scrambles out to the right side. Can he get rid of it? Airs it out downfield and caught at the 45-yard line and taken to the 50-yard line. X marks the spot. An amazing play for the Texans on third and long. Stroud dropped the ball, but he picked it up and found Xavier Hutchinson for a first down at midfield as we hit the two-minute warning. 33 yards, the Texans in business, down 6-0.
So you got the right play. Do you care to take a stab at how the vote shook out here?
I think it was 53% Xavier Hutchinson.
72.3%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
wow.
72.3%. Number two was the Nico catch at 15%. Number three was Damian Pierce's run, 11%. And then Dare, poor Dare, 1.4% for a touchdown, by God.
You as the gatekeeper got to keep the Tank Dell play out of it.
Yeah.
Maybe you should do one now where you go head-to-head Xavier Hutchinson versus Tank Dell.
Or, yeah, because, yeah, there were people suggesting that, the Tank Dell. So, okay, so do like a run, like a quasi runoff here, right? All of a sudden some candidate jumps out of the stands.
A little bit like some elections, yeah, where there's, you introduce a new one in a late stage. Like, hey, by the way, of course, what I'm talking about is when they hired Lovie Smith,
right,
where he hadn't been in the running, and then all of a sudden he was.
Exactly.
The Texans had announced their finalists, and they said, hold on, wait a second. Lovie Smith is a finalist now, too.
Not referring to anything else.
Yes.
Page. All right. Oh, so on the defensive side of the ball. Now, Johnny's selection on the defensive side of the ball, if you just missed it, we just got done with John Harris talking draft, but I bounced this question off of him. The four plays we had for best defensive play of the year, I have Danielle Hunter strip sack fumble against New England only because I needed Danielle Hunter in there in some fashion because he was so good this year. I picked that one. It was the most impactful to me in terms of the game flow. So Danielle Hunter strip sack fumble against New England out of the gate in the second half. Jalen Petrie's interception right before the half against Anthony Richardson and the Colts set up a touchdown. The Derek Barnett scoop and score play against Dallas that we just heard Johnny talking about. And then I had Derek Stingley Jr.'s second interception against Miami to close the game out against Tyreek Hill, where he went up and ripped the ball away from Tyreek Hill. Which of those four, Johnny picked the Barnett sack scoop score. Which one do you think the people chose?
I'm on to you now that I realize after I guessed on the first one that you've already shown me who the answer is. So I'm gonna say Stingley, the Stingley interception versus
How did
Miami.
I show you the answer?
You've got it highlighted in green on the show.
Oh, I didn't highlight it. Oh, Ben must have highlighted. No.
Oh,
yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Ben. Ben must have highlighted it so he knew which one to pick. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, well, do you care to guess the percentage at which?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
I think that will be. The Barnett one was so good.
Yeah.
And you didn't put clips of these up in your poll or anything.
No.
So people weren't watching. I think the Stingley interception was probably the victor by, I bet it got 70% of the votes.
It got 58.8% of the votes. But pretty lopsided. Derek Barnett. Derek Barnett got exactly a third of the vote, 33%. And then Petrie got 6%. Hunter's the Dare in this one. He got 1.2%. Let's relive the Stingley pick.
Tua takes the snap. Tua with pressure, throwing downfield to his right, and intercepted. Stingley again. That's going to do it. The Texans are going to beat Miami. Stingley's second pick seals the deal.
Yeah, man. You could have put a lot of Stingley. We could have just done favorite Stingley interception in there, and
yeah,
we would have been able to fit it.
Yeah, I was thinking about Stingley and Kamari Lassiter and just how good they were as a duo this year. And it's extra annoying to me now that Kamari Lassiter didn't get more buzz for Defensive Rookie of the Year because, I think people, you know, they, I don't think they put much thought into this at all anyway, but if they thought about it for a moment and thought, okay, you've got a guy who's an all-pro veteran at one side with your cornerbacks, and then you've got a rookie at the other side. Who do you think teams are going to be game planning for? Who do you think teams are going to be targeting? They're going to target the hell out of Kamari Lassiter. And Kamari Lassiter ended up having a really, really good year. And was not, as we heard from multiple quarterbacks or vice or coaches say after Texans games, it's hard to pick who you're going to target. You know, that's what Tua said after the game. You know, it's hard to pick who you're going to target when you've got two cornerbacks like that. You don't really have a whole lot of options. So, yeah, Lassiter, I'm kind of glad that, keep him hungry as much as possible. Not that I worry about him ever not being hungry,
no.
But he's a guy that at least this next season, I think, is going to come in. He's going to come into the season with a lot of people really keeping an eye on him, because they'll have realized through an entire offseason as they're watching film, like, oh, wow, that was a really tough choice that quarterbacks were put into.
Yeah, it's a great corner tandem, man. They nailed that Lassiter pick for sure. Johnny always comes in with some names. Johnny Harris, when he goes to the Senior Bowl, and anytime we talk draft, and we'll have Johnny on throughout draft season with us as well, for sure. FootballTakeover.com is his website. This Gray Zabel, Seth, from North Dakota State. I need you to watch some film on him.
I've watched a little bit just on the Senior Bowl highlights. He does look scrappy.
Yeah.
He looks very swarmy.
We have a text message that mentions this. His Wikipedia page mentions it as well. He got a ton of NIL offers from SEC schools to come play in the SEC, and he chose to stay at North Dakota State his final year with his teammates.
Really?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Casario loves stuff like that.
Right.
Casario loves when a guy like Will Anderson and a couple other guys on the team decided to play in that final bowl game, even if it wasn't a playoff game. That he really likes that. Some kind of demo. Well, Kamari Lassiter is a guy that had flirted with not playing in the final game, and then ended up deciding he couldn't help himself. He had to be with the team.
Like decided not to play, and then just like he got this itch, it didn't feel right to him,
And then the other dynamic there, extra on top of this, is if you're turning down NIL money, then whenever you take a guy, you're always wondering, and it used to be just with high first round picks. Now it's really with anywhere in the top three rounds. You're handing these guys a boatload of money, and it's all, and a lot of it's guaranteed. Like, how's a guy going to handle that? You want to look for some evidence that they care about football above and beyond just the making money part.
I think it's
because once all of a sudden you got over $1 million in the bank account and you're 22 years old and money's the only thing that motivates you, there's a tendency to relax a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's given guys like Nick Caserio, GMs. Scouts, whatever, but mostly GMs, because they're the ones making the decision. It's given them an awesome data point on just how guys are wired,
you got to look into it and find out whether his daddy's rich already. You know, it's always a lot easier to turn down a boatload of money if your daddy's rich.
If you turn
down all that money and you're dirt poor and it's because you want to be with your teammates, you might better just go to a monastery or something. Yeah.
I didn't want to be distracted by that money. Oh, no, I mean specifically like that money. I'm totally distracted by that money over there.
Portfolio. I need to rebalance my portfolio already, and frankly, I don't need the administrative nightmare of all this extra money. We're trying to work out a tax plan here.
It's not a colloquial that. I mean specifically that money over there. I'm totally distracted by daddy's money over here. Text message. Us middle screen. Stingley should have been defensive player of the year if the Texans offense didn't suck so bad. I think he would have. Here I had an emailer on the Utopia podcast bring up that exact question. Like, hey, I'm kind of mad that Stingley wasn't a finalist for defensive player of the year. This is almost like awards 101. Like awards, you got to set a narrative oftentimes early in the year. And the first impressions are really important. The odds board coming into the year has all of a sudden become important in this new age of gambling that we live in. Everybody looks at that. If Stingley had his last four games of the season, and the playoff game, but if he had played like he did in the last four or five games, in the first four or five games, he would have been I don't know if he would have won, but he would have been a finalist. Like he made a late run into the relevance radar.
Counterpoint.
Yep.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow got into the mix with a lot of big numbers for the Cincinnati Bengals down the stretch.
Yeah,
yes,
he had the classic, hey, he should be the MVP because, look, there's nobody more valuable than him to his team.
He did.
Yeah.
Now Joe Burrow has gotten to a Super Bowl. Joe Burrow had more pelts on the wall probably.
Career-wise.
Career-wise. So it's a good counterpoint. You're right. Like, there are
Will Damn right it is.
Will Anderson Jr. made a late run and got the Defensive Rookie of the Year last year. So it can happen, but I felt like T.J. Watt was anointed Defensive Player of the Year by like week 7, and like everybody else is going to have to get abducted by aliens to not win it. So we'll see, because T.J. Watt wasn't great down the stretch.
Oh, no, but he's not. I don't think he ended up. He's not going to win it.
You don't think so?
No. He fell. I mean,
I know he had a bad last three games.
Fall apart.
Yeah, he had a bad last three games. I mean, he was the favorite, like, in week 17.
It was a favorite, but it also didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah.
I think part of that was the Steelers themselves as a defense got off to a really hot start.
Yes.
And then they started to kind of fall apart.
Yep.
They were leaning so heavily on the defense.
Yeah.
So I'll be surprised if T.J. Watt wins
it. I wonder who wins it then if it's not T.J. Watt. I got to go look and see what it looks like, what the odds board looks like there on that one.
It was very tight at the top with a bunch of pass rushers, if I recall the last time I looked at the stats.
Yeah, Trey Hendrickson probably up there. It's probably a Bosa brother mixed in there, at least a Bosa cousin mixed in there. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, we just got the best news yesterday about the Super Bowl and the coverage of the Super Bowl. This has potential to be absolutely amazing. We will tell you what it is, but first, want to tell you real quick that we've got a huge contest going on, the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest for Odyssey. Download the Odyssey app, or if you're in the Odyssey app, be sure to listen to Sports Radio 610 for an hour each day, and you'll get your entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. Winner headed to Vegas with flight and hotel accommodations. You and three guests, and the four of you are going to get $20,000 to fund the ultimate viewing experience for the first two rounds of the college basketball tournament. Best thing to happen to Super Bowl coverage is coming up next.
Oh, T.J. Watt is currently second behind Pat Surtain for the odds there. So we'll see. Sean and I will have to make a side bet on this.